Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, today we're going to talk about the big article, huge, massive article, from Time Magazine.
Yes.
That about the person of the year for 2017.
It must have appeared about a week or so ago.
It was
on newsstands.
Yeah.
In December, because it's person of the year.
Right.
So at the end of the year, I guess the last issue is always person of the year.
Right.
And this year's person, 2017's person of the year.
Right.
Were six women, only five of whom are visible,
right,
dressed in black.
Right.
Black, yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. One is not completely visible for reasons of
anonymity.
Mm-hmm. And they are in black because that is the symbol of the Me Too movement.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So,
and so these are women who really have been, I don't know, again, I'm stuck with that, the idea of calling it a movement and saying that these women are the pioneers in this, because anybody who says anything, anybody who comes out and talks about these things are pioneers, really. And so, you know, certainly these women had various platforms that they were able to use to really get some momentum behind the movement. But, you know, anyone who says anything about being harassed or being abused, certainly is should be on the cover.
Right. And I think these women were chosen because they represent the cross section.
Right.
One of the women is a strawberry picker, known to us here in Central Florida because it is strawberry season now. And so you see.
Well, she isn't necessarily known to us.
No, she's not, but strawberry pickers.
Strawberry pickers.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you have her, and then you have a lobbyist and a professional woman. And as they say in the article, one of the women spends more in rent every month than the farm worker makes in 2 months. And
right.
So there's income disparity, professional, educational disparity among these women, but it shows the cross-section of women who have been abused.
Right.
And and as we said with yesterday's podcast, it takes courage for these women to come out. Finally, they do have a voice.
Mm-hmm.
And we said yesterday about my friend who finally came out, a young woman who finally came out and discussed her secret, the secret that she's been carrying around for 9 years. So it takes courage.
Yes.
It takes courage to come out and do these sorts of things. And so Time Magazine recognized them for Person of the Year.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about, I think the first thing to mention about the hashtag MeToo is that it is not something that started in October, that particular hashtag.
Right. Yeah, the hashtag itself.
Right. It wasn't even started by Ashley Judd.
No.
Did I say Naomi Judd yesterday? I think I said Naomi Judd yesterday. I got to go back and listen to it again. But it was Ashley Judd. It wasn't even started by Ashley Judd when in 97 when some that we'll talk the situation that we'll talk about in a moment. This was from years ago with a woman who is working who was working with young women and working to empower them and to help build their esteem and their confidence and everything. Mm-hmm. And so this started years ago with her, but has been rejuvenated as a hashtag in recent times.
Yeah, she created it in 2006.
Right.
It was Tamara Burke, and she created the hashtag in 2006.
Right.
And eventually it found its way to an actor.
Alyssa Milano.
Alyssa Milano, right? And she posted it one night on the internet and said, if you have been, you know, respond to this with hashtag me too.
Right.
And just almost as a whim.
Right.
And she woke up the next morning and there were 30,000 responses, which absolutely overwhelmed her.
Right.
She had no idea.
Right. And so this was in October of last year. And
but even that was getting way ahead of things.
Right. Because within 2 weeks of that initial post, I think the estimate was like 1.7 million people in 85 different countries
worldwide
had used the hashtag.
So we went from 30,000 the first night
to 1.7 million people
in 2 weeks.
Right. So not just responses, which you could have multiple responses from the same person.
Right.
1.7 million people
individuals. Responded.
So
this it really exploded. Right. This really exploded.
But again, as you said, we're kind of getting ahead of it. Let's talk about in 1997.
Right.
Ashley Judd was one of the first to talk about harassment in Hollywood.
Yes.
And I guess, I have to admit that in 97, I don't know that I was paying a whole lot of attention to things. But I don't remember remember anything coming out about that.
I don't know Ashley Judd's father, but he was in the lobby of the hotel.
Okay.
Because when she went, do you want to tell the whole story?
No, yeah, go ahead.
No. I mean, we want to tell it now.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a Harvey Weinstein story.
Right.
Okay. This is the beginning of the unraveling of Harvey Weinstein.
Mm-hmm.
So Ashley Judd, this was before she became really famous, was interviewed by him, and he requested sexual favors of her. And she was appalled and astonished, ran downstairs, and her father was in the lobby of the hotel.
Right.
And she told her father what happened. And they don't go on to explain anything, but I had two thoughts. One was, Harvey Weinstein must have been a pretty powerful guy for Dad not to go back up to the hotel room and confront him.
Right.
I think I would have.
Yeah.
I think I would have. The other thing is how powerless everybody was.
Right.
Because what including Dad.
Right.
Okay. What Ashley Judd says is she wanted to do something, but she had no place to take this. There was no place for her to go with this complaint.
Right.
And that's when she realized the plight that all women were in. Because if she had no place to go, what were other women?
Right. And hers is an influential family.
That's her mother was already famous.
Right.
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 Mm-hmm.
So you're right. If she didn't have a voice that would be heard about these issues, you know, what chance did a strawberry picker or a
hotel maid or a 13-year-old girl like this dear little friend of mine, 13-year-old girl, what possible recourse would she has none.
Right.
So she had to sit on this horrible little secret for her entire life.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, that brings us up to last year. And over the course of the past couple years, I suppose we should say, there have been reports here and there about different personalities engaging in sexual harassment and having to pay payouts and things like that to keep things hushed.
Mm-hmm.
Bill O'Reilly, one in particular, was in the news several times.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of started cracking the egg, I suppose.
Right.
But it wasn't until October when it really broke open with the report about Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, because he was so powerful
in
that industry. I think the perfect storm was you had this very powerful, almost untouchable person, but he was exploiting women who were famous, and so they had a voice.
Right.
Young girls, strawberry pickers, hotel maids, and office workers didn't have that same voice. These women had a voice, and that's what people began to hear.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so in October, Ashley Judd talked about it again, but much more openly, and with the New York Times.
Right.
And that's when it went. And what's really built this as a forum, basically, is that as soon as she said something, more people started talking. More actresses began speaking out and said, that happened to me as well. That the same thing happened to me. Right. And very, very quickly, this this grew. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was pretty remarkable.
Right, because what you have two forms of fear. One is embarrassment. Okay, so the first thing you have is, this happened to me, and you know, was it my fault? Right. Am I to blame? So you have that. But the second thing is that women were afraid because of their careers. Mm-hmm. So we go all the way back to Hester, back in 1868, where she was afraid because of her job.
Right.
And so women didn't want to say anything because they needed to have a job. So they were afraid to say anything for fear that they would be blacklisted or blackballed and not be able to get, because Harvey Weinstein could ruin your career. He had enough influence that he could ruin your career. The other thing that I think it's Rose McGowan who talks about, she was actually physically threatened by one of her perpetrators, that he would, if she ever said anything of what he had done to her, that he would gouge her eyes out and throw her in the Hudson River or something.
Yeah, I think it was her.
And she said she really lived in fear. This wasn't, she didn't take it as an idle threat. She was terrified of this man after that. You have this embarrassment on the one hand, and debilitating fear on the other. Fear for your job, and then fear for your safety.
Yeah, So with the momentum building, with the hashtag MeToo, and the more women coming out and speaking out about it, and you know, I think what's really helped is the situation of people like Ashley Judd and Rose McGowan, and then eventually Taylor Swift. And some other people who women tend to look up to, look to them as models of womanhood and the like, to see that they had been victimized.
Right.
But yet they were able to come out and say something and to talk about it.
Right.
I think that has empowered and emboldened lot of women to now be able to come out and say something.
Right. And I think that women now are beginning to feel safer. Mm-hmm. If you scroll, go to that Taylor Swift section, because there's a wonderful quote there. There it is. She says... that
you should have prepared me so that I could have it ready.
I think it's above that. Above. Yeah. The moment I'm not, she said during the trial, because she was assaulted by this director, and she's by a radio DJ. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he sexually assaulted her.
Right.
She reported it.
Mm-hmm.
And he lost his job.
Right.
He then sued her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he sues her.
Right.
Takes her to court. And the attorney said to her that, don't you feel bad that you got him fired? Mm-hmm. And she said, I'm not going to let you or your client make me feel in any way that this is my fault. I'm being blamed for the unfortunate events of his life that are a product of his decisions, not mine.
Right.
That wouldn't have happened a few years ago.
Right.
The only reason it did happen is because of Taylor Swift's power and influence.
Right.
But you begin to see for the first time that women are saying, this is not my fault.
Right.
This was his decision. Don't turn this and make it my fault. Because until recently, we have this legal defense of a woman is promiscuous by nature, you know, or that she didn't fight hard enough. How much can I say? Well, I know a woman who was raped, and her perpetrator was not convicted because she didn't fight hard enough.
Fascinating.
And that was a legal defense, is that the court decided that she didn't put up enough of a fight, and so it wasn't considered rape. It was considered consensual.
And historically, we as we went through the history yesterday, you know, historically, women have had very little to say about the process, and it's and as you said, have been accused because of the way she was dressed or because of the way that she was behaving. And you know, there was a relatively recent interview with a prominent religious figure who made a claim that well, she deserved to be harassed or assaulted because of the way that she was dressed and behaving and everything. And that core belief, you know, again, I think it goes back to, for whatever reason, because of the way that society in general has been for past generations, many men have grown up with the perspective that you can, that women are objects, and that women, you can do these things and it's fine. It's going to be okay, because if they dress like that, it's because they want this, or if they act like that, it's because they want that. And it's fascinating to me that such mentality continues.
I'm older than you.
That's true.
A couple years. When I was in school, high school, that was the norm. We believed that girls were objects. I mean, it was just the world that we grew up in.
Right. And I think it's a relatively subconscious thing.
It was internalized. It was the messages that you got from media. It was the messages that you got from everybody. It was the messages you got from older men, from the media, from everybody.
And if we're honest, for a lot of people growing up, that was the messages that they got from women, that they got from their mothers, and that they got from because people behaved in a way that was consistent with that belief.
That's right.
Luckily, I'm thankful that that's changing. And you know, of course, I remember when I was growing up, my mother had much more of a voice in our family than I remember, like in the programs that we would watch, where you know, programs at the time where the mothers didn't have a voice.
The mothers didn't have a voice. They cooked and they cleaned and they were there for support.
Or if they had a voice, it was outside of the presence of the father, and it was sort of you know, quiet. Influential perhaps, but quiet. But I grew up in a home where my mother had much more of a voice, and she let that voice be heard. And so it was, I think it, that those maybe were, some families were starting to change at the time, but still, you know, in the 80s and 90s, it was still.
All through the 60s and 70s, I think, I don't remember the 80s as well, but the 60s and 70s, certainly, women did not have leading roles, even like I Love Lucy, or it wasn't until Mary Tyler Moore and those kind of shows started to come along that women were in positions of some authority or some responsibility. But I Love Lucy, she had to be a clown.
Right.
Even though she was doing many of the right things,
right,
she had to play it down and be silly about it, clownish about it. And those were the messages that we were getting, is that women are kind of airheads, you know, they're objects to be used. And so as a white male, you internalize these messages, what you saw. You saw men going to work and women staying at home working. You saw men going to college and women getting married. And so you just internalized all this stuff.
Right.
And we're talking about educated people. I mean, you and I are, we didn't bring a lot of those biases with us.
Right.
Okay. Many of my friends did.
Right.
I mean, many of my friends did talk this way, and many of my relatives talked this way, that this is what this is what women are for.
Right.
You know, that's what they're for, our enjoyment.
Right.
We talked about Hugh Hefner yesterday. That's what Hugh Hefner told us, that these are objects of pleasure.
Right.
He was simply, you know, he published this as a paper in college and failed it because the professor said this is all wrong. He left college and started Playboy. And all he did was tap into the existing ethics and norms of the time. Is that these are cute little things running around in bunny costumes to be used for your pleasure.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. He was just tapping into the ethic at the time.
Right. So we're getting, this podcast is going on a little bit longer than we typically do, but...
We figured this was going to happen.
Yes.
We talked about it.
We did.
Okay.
So again, the idea behind the Me Too is the premise that, you know, people coming out and saying, you know, this happened to me too.
Right.
I also was harassed. I also was mistreated. I also was assaulted or battered. Mm-hmm. And gaining a voice to be able to join the collective. And I think that empowerment right. has been crucial. Because mm-hmm. we didn't see that same type of empowerment, not on this scale,
right?
With in the 90s,
no.
With the stuff with Bill Clinton or Clarence Thomas, we didn't see it, even in the mid 2000s.
We didn't. 2013.
Right. Yeah, we didn't see it then, but we're seeing this explosion of people coming together mm-hmm. and joining their voice together right. to really create change, hopefully.
That's right. And the dam has burst.
Right.
And it makes me think of some people say, well, perhaps the net is being cast a little too broad.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That maybe some people are getting snared in this thing who shouldn't be snared mm-hmm. in it. As a white male, I will say that's the price we're going to pay.
Right.
Because it's long overdue
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
this movement,
yeah.
this size and magnitude and passion should have occurred.
Right.
If a woman is exploiting the Me Too movement, some of that will happen and that will sort itself out.
Yeah.
But this movement needed to happen.
Yeah.
If a few of us get caught in it, that'll work itself out.
Right.
This had to happen.
Yeah.
Women needed to be able to get to this point where the legal system, where customs begin to change and mm-hmm. the legal system begins to listen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, all right. Well, that is it for today then.
Mm.
We will check out the Time Magazine article. It's a really good article.
That's a good summary
lengthy,
of this.
But it's really good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, all right. That's it for today. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning.